The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Kent Summers off the DL, I guess is the best way to put it. I'm not making flip about bypass surgery, but he had bypass surgery. It is NFL draft week. What is Larry Fitzgerald going to do from Kent's view? And this whole offseason with the Cardinals, Larry Fitzgerald, the draft, all that with Kent Summers, with AZ Central Sports, their lead columnist. Bobby Dooley is going to be with us today. Phoenix Rising FC is a really good story. We have done soccer here on this platform since we started back in 2011, and I've had the NFL guys say, why do you do soccer? Soccer's not American, blah, blah, blah. Guys, soccer's huge, and anytime that I've got a pro sports team here in the Valley that has their season kicking off at a new facility, I'm going to be all over it. And they play Friday night. Rising FC has moved down to Gila River. They built this cool-looking stadium along the 202 and I-10. Me being a Southeast Valley guy, I have driven by it many times. So I want to get caught up with Bobby Dooley, their general manager, on all things around Rising FC with the opening of the season. Fans send me notes about MLS and the talent base and the ownership commitment and all that stuff. So we're going to go through it one by one with the general manager of Phoenix Rising FC, and that is Bobby Dooley. That comes up at about 10:40 this morning. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. I watched the Suns last night. Very impressive. I'm looking forward to watching the Diamondbacks tonight. Thought about going to the game, not going to do it because the Padres are in town. And so it's cool that here in April, yeah, the NFL draft is coming up this week, and we do a lot around the draft. The Brad Sessmatt Football AZ show on Bally Sports airs tonight. 12 airings between now and Thursday. Trey Wingo, the headline guest this week with Pro Football Network, formerly at ESPN. We'll do a ton around the draft. We've done a ton around the draft. But it's nice to have an NBA team that doesn't stink. It's nice to have an NBA team that you look at and say, wow, we're going to have games in late May and June, and who knows how long. And the NBA has moved their calendar back. Free agency is now going to be August 1st. So the summer is just going to go foo with the Suns. It will be. Because I think Chris Paul can opt out on August 1st. I don't know if he will or won't, but that is something to keep an eye on. The game last night, Torrey Craig, I like him. We talk about grit guys, and in the playoffs, you have to have guys that are gritty, that there's going to be physical play, there's going to be fouls, there's going to be chippiness, there's going to be shoving, pushing, fights. There's going to be that. And if you don't have grit guys, you have a bunch of nice guys, you're not going to have great success. Nobody on this roster has played in an NBA Finals with any big experience. So that's already going to be a check mark against the Suns. I thought in the game on Sunday that Brooklyn bullied them and pushed them around. I thought last night without Jay Crowder not playing needs to be brought up. Like I'm screaming on Sunday's broadcast at the ESPN team. There was not one mention of Jay Crowder being out of the lineup. Like you have to know this. I know you guys are just rolling through all these games, but you have to make mention that a starter who's a physical presence when Blake Griffin is punking DeAndre Ayton, that if Jay Crowder were on the floor, there'd be a different tone. Didn't do it. And so for the Suns to come off a road trip without their full complement of players against some really good teams, I mean, all those games that they played are against teams that are going to be in the postseason. And so for them to go 3-2, I'll take that all day long. I was very impressed last night because you can get in that space back to back. You got a long flight home. And then the Clippers in Utah are this week. So it's fun to be able to look ahead and say, you know what? Tomorrow night, Suns, Clips. I'm on that. Clips are a game back of the Suns. Suns are closing in on Utah. So who wouldn't want to be a part of this? It's a good time to watch a team that is well worth your investment in time. If you feel like you want to go get tickets, it's worth your money. A lot of years I've sat here doing this where it's like, why are fans paying money to go watch this slop? Or one of the teams is good and the other one's just awful. And that's not the case now. So And, you know, for Monty Williams, did he sew up Coach of the Year last night? I don't know. But I know it's between him and Tibbs. Got to be. Got to be between those two. And to have a performance like they had in the Garden last night, that was impressive. It was an 8-point win. Booker had 30, and now they come back home. On the baseball side of things, so Torrey Lovello had some interesting comments after the game Sunday in Atlanta about the team is finding their identity and that they are a gritty group of battlers. I'm paraphrasing, but he did use the word grit. And you know what? 11-11. And think about it, Zach Gallen wasn't a part of the first couple of starts. He was on the 10-day to start out the season. And Madison Bumgarner was dreadful. And yet here they are, 11-11. Yeah, it's just two games against the Padres. But the Padres are coming off a mentally exhausting week of 7 games in 10 days against the Dodgers. And here are the Diamondbacks, who nobody is giving any shot to. And, you know, between San Francisco playing, I think, better than what people had expected, and the Diamondbacks hanging around, I'll take 500 after 20-plus games. The benchmarks of a season, you go to May 31, you go to July 4, you just go to the holidays, and then you go to the trade deadline, and that's really where you find out a team. I was not wanting to see a 6-16 team, because Torrey probably bounced. But if you're Ken Kendrick in this ownership group, and you've got a manager who's dangling, whether they want to admit to it or not, an 11-11 start, couple games against the Padres. I'm not saying tomorrow you pull him in and extend him, but I would like to think that Torrey should have enough rope that you just say, guys, we need to move forward with this, and let's get something figured out by the time we get to Memorial Day. Whether the thing falls apart or not, I don't know. So it's fun to have the Padres in town. Tatis is he's must-see TV for me. He is. There's those players that just come along that I cannot step away or flip the channel when I know Tatis is coming to bat. I found myself the other day doing my days with earbuds in, listening to Mike Farron and Tom Candiotti do the game. Like, I have not done that in a while with this team. So they're interesting. They are interesting to me. So that's going on. All right, Kent Summers on the other side, all things around the draft, getting caught up with Kent on his health for a few minutes. He's probably not going to be too comfortable talking about it, but we'll ask. And then Bobby Dooley, the general manager of Phoenix Rising FC. That is all straight ahead. I'm Brad Sussmad. All right, as promised, Kent Summers is now with us. It's really good to see Kent. Kent went through bypass surgery. AZ Central sports columnist, good guy around town, has covered the Cardinals for many years, seen a lot of bad football, seen some good football too, with the draft coming up on Thursday. Wanted to have him on board to talk about number 16. He, of course, knows everything that Larry Fitzgerald's going to do. So Kent will be able to break that down. In all seriousness, it's really good to see you. How are you? Walk people through this. Yesterday I was at a place where someone said, yeah, Kent Summers had bypass surgery. Can you believe that? I said, well, not really, but so what happened?
Thank you. Long story short, last summer I started experiencing some shortness of breath when I exercised, and I was out of town up in the Utah. And I blamed it on the elevation, but it was obvious, you know, after a while that wasn't it. And it got increasingly worse, and then ran a bunch of tests, fast forward to January, and diagnosed with 3 clogged arteries that needed attention, needed bypass. So I was a little taken aback as I wrote and told someone, when you have an angiogram and they start packing up 10 minutes into it, that's never a good sign, I learned. But I'm doing well. Bypass surgery in February, 2 months later, I feel great, walking 2 to 4 miles most days. So back at work, and an exciting time to be there.
Yeah. Did you look back and say, what did I do that I could have done differently?
Play that a little bit. Yeah. I guess, but you know, then again, I was fairly active, which, you know, the doctor said, you know, really saved me, because the heart sort of worked around, one of the arteries, which had been clogged for some time, and, you know, sort of created its own blood supply, as I understand it. I didn't have really high cholesterol. Like a lot of people who are 60 years old, I could lose 10 to 15 pounds, but it wasn't like I was obese. Anyway, it happened. And I joke to people, if you want to feel young, go spend some time in a Sun City hospital. And that's what I did. They took great care of me out there, but I don't know how many times the staff there was like, we just don't see people, you know, who look like you that often. So yeah, if you need a little confidence boost, just head out there if you're somewhat young.
Have you had people reach out to you and say, what should I know?
A few, mostly I've had people reach out to me, you know, some good friends that said, you know, I've had some shortness of breath for a while. I'm going to go get this checked out. I'm going to go, you know, see my doctor and get a stress test if that's what the doctor says I need, that kind of thing. And, you know, so good. I'm not putting myself out there as some sort of beacon for the American Heart Association or anything, but you know, I'm glad when I felt symptoms, you know, I went and got attention and, you know, I credit my wife for part of that. She was very insistent, like, this isn't you, this isn't normal. And luckily I listened this time.
right. Kent Summers is with us for a few minutes. AZ Central sports columnist. What is Larry Fitzgerald doing? What is going on here?
I have no idea what's taken so long. You know, is he really not made a decision? Is he really, you know, still weighing whether he's going to come back or not? Does he feel like, hey, I don't have a contract, I don't need to come out and announce my retirement in case I have a sudden change of heart over the summer if he has decided to return? He's not going to make $11 million as he has for the last four or five, each of the last four or five seasons. So does money factor into that? Is he, you know, I don't think he's in heated contract negotiations with Michael Bidwell or anything, but you know, maybe part of it is Larry said, you know, do I want to come back, subject my body to that for $3 or $4 million a year when I have all this money in the bank and a ton of other interests? But it's a long way of saying I have no clue what's going on. I have a hard time believing, as the Cardinals are saying, you know, Steve Keim said this, you know, in the pre-draft press conference, Cliff Kingsbury too, we don't know what Larry's doing. We haven't even talked to him about it. I can't believe those conversations haven't happened. And even if Keim and Kingsbury are being truthful, I have to believe that Michael Bidwell and Larry Fitzgerald have had that conversation, and the Cardinals have an idea of what he's doing.
Well, they have to, from a business standpoint, right? I mean, just purely dollars, and here's what we have to work with this year, in a year where the cap went down, Kent. I mean, I look at that. I saw Larry in February down in Tucson, and he said, I'll let you know, walk some holes on with him on a golf course. Saw him actually get mad and yell at himself a few times, which I'd never seen. And he said he was, you know, nowhere near, but he'd make a decision. To sit here the week before the draft and have nothing, I just find, as you said, hard to believe. One, two, whatever he says, I've got to just take a look at it and say, if you say you're done, then I'm probably going to believe around September or October, your name's going to surface about wanting to come back and help a team. It's
a paradox with him, because he hates talking about himself and his contract and his money. There are a few subjects that are off limits, not off limits, but that you see him kind of like, I don't want to go there. And that's it. Like his career, his legacy, his money, most of all. And yet the flip side is he's created all of this by not announcing a decision. You know, the speculation, you know, continues. So I don't know what he's doing. You have to think it's that, you know, some kind of announcement or something is coming soon. Maybe it's taken this long to put the final touches on a Players Tribune piece. I don't know.
Yeah, because that's where it's going to come from.
Instagram, Players Tribune piece, something.
Yeah,
something like that. And at one point, you know, it fits, like a lot of athletes, you know, had a financial interest in the Players Tribune. I don't know if that's still the case, but, you know, it's a natural place to get all of your thoughts out, especially when you've said forever, hey, I'm not going to hold a press conference, I'm not going to take questions, I'm just going to be gone. So what better way than to write your own essay and then just be gone?
Yeah, over the weekend, he was at a charity event. I don't know if you saw the piece of video of him speaking at this charity event. It was here in the Valley, in Paradise Valley. It was about a minute and a half of him talking. And he said, Phoenix is always going to be my home. And that's about as close as he came to saying anything. It was a black tie event. Larry looked great. Looked like he could dress and play tomorrow, as always. But yeah, it's just been it's been a mystery, and I'll just leave that at that. The off season, what do you make out of all these signings? Is it just a bunch of shiny names that may be able to play, or is it, it's pretty wise what they've done? What do you make out of it?
Well, I think they had to do it. I think it has been wise what they've done, and I give them credit. As I wrote last week, it's in a lot of ways compensation for some poor draft picks that they've had to fill holes, you know, at center, where they've tried a couple of different guys. The latest, Mason Cole, a third round pick. At receiver with AJ Green, where they've, you know, drafted, I don't know what, five receivers maybe in the last 2 or 3 years, and really none of them have panned out. Christian Kirk, I think, has shown potential, but he hasn't been consistent. So they had to fill that spot. They had to go out and find a cornerback because they never were really able to find somebody to pair with Patrick Peterson, at least successfully long term. So they had to do it. Who knows? With old guys, there's a track record both ways. You know, like a J.J. Watt or an A.J. Green, they could come here, put up great stats, and rejuvenate an organization. We've seen that with Chris Paul and the Suns. Or they could go the other way and sort of be washed up, and, you know, it just turns into a horrible experience and a money drag on the cap. It really could go both ways. Selfishly, it makes for a really interesting season for for a journalist. And I think for fans too. I mean, to be able to see JJ Watt in a Cardinals uniform, I'd pay money to see that.
Do you think that we are in a space where this is a make or break year for Cliff? Because the track record of the Cardinals, unless the last name is Wisenhunt or Arians, is it's 3 years and a change comes. It's just the way it looks. And with all the buildup and all the hype and 5 years of not making it into the postseason, and I would put Kyler in that a little bit too. You know, this is really a year where the two of them have to show, or Michael has just shown the propensity to say, push the button, eject, and let's turn the page again.
Yeah, I think that's especially true with Cliff. I think it's true with Steve Keim, or at least it should be. I mean, they have the longest playoff drought in the NFC right now at 5 years. I mean, everybody else has been to the playoffs. And granted, the Washington football team went last year and wasn't really a playoff team. But you just can't continue that. I mean, you can't sell that to fans. It depends on how they get there. If they go 7-9, 8-8, and it's a season where they've had a bunch of injuries and Kyler got hurt, and, you know, they had to go to Colt McCoy or something, then, yeah, I can't sit here and say they make a change. But if it's like last year, where, you know, they're up and down, and there seems to be at times, you know, what does this team believe in? Are they tough enough, et cetera? If that continues to be a trend, then yeah, I don't see how an owner keeps a current coach or management.
Okay. 16th pick. What do you, two-part question. What would you like them to do? What do you think they will do Thursday night?
I think they've got to avoid the thinking that they've got to fill a need or what's been a historical need for them. Say, you know, don't think you have to take a receiver or you have to take a cornerback. You know, be open to, I mean, the cliche, the best player available. I think that's what they have to do at that spot. There's been a lot of speculation, as there always is around the draft, with every team. You know, that Keim maybe wants to trade up and get a receiver. He said in his pre-draft press conference, more likely he would trade down because they're already missing third and fourth round picks. He's a scout at heart, a college scout who loves to have picks going into the draft. I think that's probably the most likely scenario if they trade, that they trade into the bottom of the first round. Otherwise, I think they sit there and take, I mean, a really good player. I think, you know, an offensive lineman, you know, the guard from USC is a possibility. You address, you know, you set your offensive lineup for, you know, with some youngsters for years to come. I think that makes a lot of sense. Cornerback makes a lot of sense. I think inside linebacker makes a lot of sense. Somebody to pair with Isaiah Simmons long-term. So there's a lot of different directions they could go. I know what can't happen is, you know, they need a rookie to come in and contribute, you know, as that first year. That was what was disappointing about Isaiah Simmons, is we heard so much about him and the Swiss Army knife and able to do this and able to do that. And, you know, I know it's a complicated system to learn, but you know what? Other inside linebackers around the league, rookie inside linebackers, came in and contributed. And it was a little bit of a red flag. So, you know, and a team that hasn't made the playoffs for 5 years, a rookie should be able to come in and play.
Yeah, I was at an event yesterday, the same event that they were asking about you, and they were screaming about DK Metcalf. It's like DK Metcalf will go down in history with Cardinal fans as, what were we thinking?
Yeah, I mean, and it's because they took Andy Isabella, right? Yeah, who from production standpoint has been the exact opposite, physical standpoint, the exact opposite. I will look back, and I remember when DK Metcalf came out of college, there were a lot of concerns that, yeah, this guy had this great, wonderful body and just a physical specimen, but he couldn't stay healthy either. And where do you take him? Do you take him that high? But looking at it, man, if your college scouting staff rated Andy Isabella above DK Metcalf, if I'm an owner, I'm asking some serious questions and or making changes.
I will let you go off that so you can go take a walk, because you need to get your steps in every day. And stay in touch. You look great. Congratulations on getting over that hill and on to the next challenge in life. Thanks, Kent.
Thanks, Brad.
There's Kent Summers with us with AZ Central Sports. Make sure you subscribe to them. Get their content. They do great work over there. And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, we have talked through the years here on the platforms about soccer, and we've done it to where I have the traditional football fan. I'm not meaning to pick a fight here, but the traditional football fan is saying, can you please just stick to American football? I'm like, no, I'm a soccer dad. Daughter went on a college scholarship, so I'm going to pay attention to if it's Arizona United, which then became Phoenix Rising FC, and when they move stadiums and when they make player movement, and we're going to put people on and talk about it. And I'm appreciative of the followers that we have on this platform. And to that end, Bobby Dooley is back with us, the general manager of Rising FC. They open a new stadium. Their season opener, regular season opener, is this Friday night. It is year three for you now in this role, or year four? I'm thinking
this is my fifth. This is my fifth. I just clipped my 5 year anniversary with the organization.
Time flies. I remember visiting with you at Peoria Sports Complex back in the day in front of family and not even friends, just family, and how things have grown. There's a lot to get to here. So let's just first get an overview of where you think the organization on the field is today as general manager.
No, I'm excited. We brought a good core group of guys back. Unfortunately, you know, we have some unfinished business for that core group that got to the final last year in a challenging year and stayed together and you made it all the way to Tampa. So there's certainly, for those of us that were here last year, a bad taste in our mouth and you know, some unfinished business. And for those pieces that we added, we're pretty excited about those pieces that are going to push, they're going to compete with our existing guys. And, you know, for all the things that we're doing here as an organization, you know, and the success we've had on the field, we're able to, it's helpful when attracting some top talent to come out here. So really excited. You know, it's been a long off season. We try to pride ourselves to have the shortest off season, because that means that we've played the longest in the previous season. So for everyone, it's been a long off season. You know, we started the season a little bit later for you know, a lot of different reasons to try to get past this so that we can start operating our businesses. And so a longer preseason, more time without games. And I know our group, our staff is excited to get on the field on Friday night.
What do you like most about your team on the field from a general manager's point of view?
On the field, I think our depth. We try to be too deep at every position, and that competition throughout the week. You know, I think we've shown over the past couple years If it's a battle to get on in the 18, it's tough to get into the starting 11. Then that's going to help. When those individuals that are on the field can come together as a team and compete and get results. So, really, really excited about the pieces, and you know, whether it's national team duties or you know, injuries or things that come up. Really confident in that next man up approach and have the ability to do that. And no matter which guys are selected to play, confident in all of them that they can come together and get results.
This might be a question for Rick, but I'll ask it to you from the general manager point of view. What concerns you coming into this season?
I don't know about concern, right? I mean, there's things you can control and you need some breaks along the way. We, you know, a couple of years ago, we were able to win 20 games in a row, and it was, you know, different lineups, different things, different circumstances. And this league, it's, I'm so proud to play a small part in this league and the growth of this league. And, you know, there's new owners, there's new facilities, there's new teams, franchises coming into this league, and the talent level continues to rise each and every year. And it's no secret that teams want to get up against teams that have had success in the past. And when you couple that with a fantastic facility, you've got great fans, a great environment. You know, we're going to get everyone's best shot. And, it's again, the growth of the league and the level. So it's not going to be easy. It's never been easy. And our guys got to be ready each and every night to step up and because we're going to get everyone's best punch.
Bobby Dooley is with us. He is the general manager of Phoenix Rising FC. They open the regular season this Friday night. I would push tickets right here, right now, but I don't know how many people are going to be allowed in. So let's just get into that and then the stadium itself and the location and the why. But first, what are you going to allow in on Friday night in terms of fan base numbers?
Yeah, we're going to operate at 50% capacity, which is just right around 5,000 people here. And we'll still have, you know, fan, player, staff safety is at the forefront. Of our decisions that we make. We've implemented some new policies, a clear bag policy. We're going to go cashless, digital tickets. Part of the move, we have permanent infrastructure in place now. So permanent facilities, which certainly helps, no more water fountains. We got, you know, bottle filling stations. And so those measures, fans will be required to wear a mask and unless they're in their seat and having a food or drink with them. So we're going to continue to do that, and it allows us to space out a little bit and make sure that everyone feels comfortable, whether they're in the stands or on the field. And so 50%, and it's something that we'll continue to monitor and watch and work with, you know, local and state officials to see if the time's right. You know, hopefully we get to flex up and not flex down, but really non-committal past the first couple of games. And it's the process. I think if we've learned anything, things are so fluid. And player fan safety is at the forefront of our decision-making process. So we feel very confident and comfortable that operating the new facility at 50%, everyone will indeed be safe when they come out to our game.
So I went to the Coyotes and Suns on the same day a couple Saturdays ago because I just wanted to do a story on, look, it's fine to go back out in limited numbers. I've gotten a sense, Bobby, from a lot of people of when can I go out and what does a professional sporting event look like? And I found it to be just fine. You just have to go through things in a different sort of way. Yeah, I was told you can't use cash here. And there was a health screening in order to get into the facility at both the Coyotes and Suns. To that end, do you have a health screening that they have to go through? What is the traditional, what is it going to look like Friday night for somebody who's going to say, I want to go, I'm going to pull up. Do I have to have an app? Do I have to go through a screening and all of that? Can you address that?
Yeah, so we're a bit different than those two venues, given the fact that we're outdoors, right? And we experimented last year with the temperature scans and outdoors, and it just, due to the heat and the environment that we live in, it was proven to be inaccurate. And it wasn't, indicative of whether someone, had COVID or didn't have COVID just because the simply didn't work. So for us, it's a lot of communication in advance, right? So fans are already getting what it's going to be like, whether it's, you know, traditional how to enter into a new facility, where to exit off the freeway, which route to come in, where to park, you know, what to bring, such as the clear bag, so that someone doesn't have to, you know, parade through your purse or your bag that you're bringing into the facility. And then they have to, you know, we put some responsibilities on our fans. I think that we all owe it to our friends, our family, those that we don't know, to take care of one another. And similar to what you see walking in to get food, if you're getting takeout or in some of these other establishments, it's, you know, if you're sick, stay home, right? It's the same thing that schools are operating. If you have any symptoms, if you think that you shouldn't be going, stay home. And for that, our club is very friendly in as far as refunds or transfers of tickets and making sure. So fans are made aware. We advise them to stay home. We have communication reads in the stadium. We have signage everywhere. We want to make sure that we can keep those around us safe, and we put some responsibilities on our fans. So fans will certainly have to make sure that they're not sick and answering those questions and are aware of what they can and can't do inside our facility.
I'm pretty excited, I have to tell you, in terms of the stadium, because shoot, I can go all the way back to when soccer was being played over at ASU on a side field. And then it went over to Peoria Sports Complex, and it went to Scottsdale Stadium. You've been there. I've seen it throughout. And then it went to the location, which I thought was ideal, over in Tempe. But now you're down in a really interesting area because of the growth and the access around the mountain with a new freeway. That's my sales pitch on why you did it. Why this location? How did it come to be? And tell us about the stadium.
Yeah, the relationship with Gila River Indian Community and the folks out here at Wild Horse Pass has been nothing short of fantastic. They have the infrastructure that was in place here allowed us to transition very quickly and put up the facility that our fans are going to get to see on Friday night. So having that infrastructure and we listen to our fans, right? It's very important. And we knew the pain points, whether it was the one point of ingress, egress, whether it was the gravel roads, whether it was the parking lot, whether it was the restrooms. Those are all things that just for a variety of reasons, we were unable to make those improvements where we were before. And the opportunity presented itself. And as you said, a fantastic location that's got a tremendous amount of growth. It was also ready for, the short term, so many reasons it made sense. And the access now to the West Valley with the new 202 freeway, you know, we're only, 10, 11 miles south of Phoenix Sky here, a harbor. And, you know, even the proximity to, and you see the East Valley in the tremendous amount of growth. Mm-hmm. So for those that are even up, in North Phoenix and North Scottsdale, those that came out to the games regularly or had even one match, I think they probably sat in their cars for 45 minutes trying to get out of the facility or even longer. So while it may be, 5, 10, even 15 minutes longer, with the multiple points off the 10, off of Queen Creek, off of the 202, 48th Street, the paved roads coming in and out, I'm very, very confident their overall time and experience is going to be shorter. And then, once they get into the facility, it's just so much larger, a large green space with a video board that's facing that as fans are welcomed into the facility. And then, a larger facility that's enclosed on the north side now. So you have the horseshoe effect and, higher stands, new seats, our premium guests are elevated on the east sideline versus behind the goal now. So you take all that in there and the large video board, it just, I just can't wait to get some fans in here on Friday night and see the new digs. Cause it's something that's really come together and it wouldn't have been possible without the folks out here at Wild Horse Pass and Gila River Indian Community. So we're really excited about both the short-term potential and that's coming to fruition on Friday night that we were able to pull this off, but also the long-term and the growth opportunities to continue. We had a roughly a little over 6,000 seat stadium and now we're just shy of 10,000 now. And we're building this thing and it continues to grow. And that's because the appetite is there and the support from the fans, the support from the local media and of course the corporate community has been very, very instrumental in our growth. And you know, I think that's probably the most exciting thing for me is that we have a lot of room to grow. And that's really exciting.
A couple of things I'll get you out of here. I appreciate your time. Bobby Dooley with us, Phoenix Rising FC general manager. They open the regular season at their new facility this Friday night against San Diego. Ownership. So I've known these owners for a long time. I've sensed that in soccer here in the Valley, there hits a point of fatigue and there needs to be new ones brought in. That hasn't happened with this group that I've seen outwardly. I know there's been the pressure points and the frustration, but talk about the ownership group a little bit and the commitment to it. Because fans ask me, Brad, do you think they're going to be able to hang in there? Because we've been tantalized so many times before, but this is the first time you can say, this group's way down the line. They're not playing at some little half-baked stadium. They're not just trying to pick up guys off a league in Mesa. You know, this is legit. This is real. So talk about ownership a little bit, Bobby, if you could.
Oh man, I don't know if we have enough time, Brad. Our owners have been fantastic. They've had a vision when they took over this organization a little over 5 years ago, and committed to a new home, committed to a new identity, committed to investing in the product on the field as well as off the field, and I think it's been backed. Over the last couple of years, you've seen that. You've seen some of the talent that's coming on the field. You see the brand more and more around the Valley. You see the facilities. And now we're onto our second facility, right? And which has a lot of upgrades, multiple training fields, new buildings that will allow us to attract more teams because we have a visitor's locker room now, a front office administrative building that's on site. More seats, 10,000 seats, a beautiful video board that's dual-sided. You continue to see more and more partners support us. We have we're on television throughout the state of Arizona, right? We're kicking off on ESPN2 on Friday night to a national audience. We've won trophies. So that's all starts with ownership, and their commitment to support, to build relationships, to invest. And they've been leaders throughout the league and helping grow soccer. So I couldn't be more appreciative of our ownership group and their commitment to create a fantastic environment to not only work in but to have fans and be a part of it and listen, right? And a lot of them are new to ownership in pro sports and they're constantly trying to learn and engage with other groups so that we can be better as an organization and create a better environment and really represent, the state of Arizona and the region. So our ownership group has been instrumental in everything that we do.
What I like about this ownership group is when I first met some of them, they were just fans. And it doesn't mean they're not still fans now, but like the winning and losing for those 2 hours, that is the top of the cake. But it's all the stuff around them. It's like, I never knew this sports ownership thing was so hard. And that was 4 and 5 years ago. And now it's just, okay, we see the whole thing. They go through this transformation, I think, in owners and professional sports. And this group seems very mature for the space that they're in. The USL versus MLS is always out there. Yeah. Sacramento had a change in owner investment back out. I wrote something about it a few months back. Fans are wanting to know what the future holds. I continue to say when I'm asked and put out in public about it, it all comes down to the facility, and the MLS eventually is going to come to Phoenix. You want to address any of that? Because it's an annual question that I ask you or others about where the MLS is in the view of here in Phoenix.
Yeah, no, it's certainly a question we get. And I think, going back to ownership and when they took this professional franchise over in 2016, it was to set out to take this to the highest level and unite the state of Arizona through the sport of soccer. And you're seeing that. You're seeing 7,000-8,000 kids wearing the Phoenix Rising, badge at the youth space. You're seeing investment in the infrastructure. You can see consistent growth and success on the field. So we want to continue to take this to the highest level. And And, you know, we're very excited about where we're at. The league we're in, the USL, has been fantastic. As I mentioned, new facilities, you see what Louisville built, you see some of these new ownership groups that are coming in, new franchises such as Oakland Roots, you know, San Diego in their second year, and how they started out in New Mexico. You know, I was fortunate to spend some time with their owner, Peter, last week. And it's phenomenal to see the appetite and the passion and support in New Mexico. So the USL is growing tremendously, and soccer is growing at all levels. And we're excited to be a part of that. And not sure what the future holds, but I know that this group, this organization, is going to continue to invest in the sport. We're going to do everything we can to grow the sport and take this to the highest level.
Good stuff. I appreciate going deep with you and spending some time. I look forward to seeing you on Friday night. Congratulations on the new digs and best of luck this year, Bobby. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad. We really appreciate it.
There's Bobby Dooley, and we're back with more after this timeout.